Hello, and welcome to the Transformational Healers Summit for Helping Professionals. I'm Ariana Gray, and we're here talking to the experts to break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. Today's speaker is Françoise Mathieu, and she is the co-executive director of TEND, a company that provides consulting to high-stress, trauma-exposed organizations. I am delighted to get to talk with Françoise today because her insights into compassion fatigue and burnout really struck a chord with me, particularly how our families are usually where our burnout strikes first. So you're going to get to hear from a specialist what we can do to insulate ourselves from the impact of our work as helping professionals. Françoise, welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
So I know you've created a great gift for our listeners, and we're going to talk about that at the end of our interview. But for now, I want to jump in and get the most of our time together. So to give some background, some of your background, I want to share that you were born in French Canada in the far north, close to the polar circle, and that you lived with the Inuit for the first decade of your life. And then you have shared that your family imploded and everything fell apart. But your struggling single mother did a great job providing a stable and loving home in spite of those hard times. And you went on to become a crisis and trauma specialist, and for the past 15 years have developed expertise on burnout, compassion fatigue, secondary traumatic stress. And in 2012, you wrote the Compassion Fatigue Workbook and are a frequent speaker at trauma conferences around the continent. So, Françoise, what I really want to know is you have traveled across North America for the past 15 years, providing training to helping professionals of all stripes. What are you hearing from them?
Such a good question. Well, what's really interesting is it doesn't really matter where I am. You know, I could be in Hawaii, I could be in Alaska, I could be in a city in Canada. I'm hearing the same story over and over again, which is basically a story of diminished resources, multi-generational struggles, in the sense that, you know, a lot of the patients, clients, individuals that we serve in various capacities, you know, you could be a teacher, a police officer, are often kind of the same people. You know, they're the same people in the sense that sometimes in a community, you might all be involved with some families that are dealing with difficult circumstances due to a whole bunch of stuff, or they're not the same actual people, but they're, I can't even explain how little I have to change my talk. And that really surprised me, because I thought, surely to goodness, you know, Los Angeles and a little village in Canada is not going to be the same. But I'm actually hearing the same story over and over again, which is a huge amount of demand, increasingly complex needs and kind of, you know, patients and clients and folks who turn to us. And just that people at some point, you know, service providers are burning out. There's just not enough of them to do the work.
Right, not enough. And so we're trying to do more and more with what seems like less and less. And I know I'm always hearing, you know, self-care, self-care, self-care. That gets said in most organizations and environments. Does self-care actually work?
Such a great question. So I have kind of two answers to that. I'm a huge believer in self-care myself, and we'll probably talk about that a little bit later. You know, I believe that we have a duty to take care of ourselves so that we can be there for others, whether that's our loved ones or the folks that we serve. But the research started, you know, so about 25 years ago, when the research started on compassion fatigue and secondary traumatic stress, we didn't really have a lot of data on what worked. And so it made sense at the time that, you know, all of us scholars and educators in the field basically said, well, surely the best thing to do is to take very good care of yourself, have work-life balance, all that, and surely that's going to help. But what started happening, and there was a really great set of studies about 10 years ago that came up and said, they actually researched this, and they found out that, in particular with trauma specialists, that self-care didn't actually make a very big difference to their rates of secondary traumatic stress and burnout. It wasn't actually that effective.
And wow.
I know. And when I first read one of those papers, I was quite horrified, because I had
actually been promoting that. What do we do?
I was like, oh my goodness. So it's actually at that point that I decided to do a bit of a State of the Union about review kind of the research out there. And that's when I wrote my article Beyond Kale and Pedicures, because I was hearing the same thing from my participants who were saying to me, please don't just tell me to breathe and eat more spinach and do yoga when the demands on my work haven't changed. And it was basically what the scholars were suggesting about 10 years ago, is that we have a shift from only personal responsibility to also making organizations and systems also accountable. So that really, what I believe is that we all have a responsibility as individuals, as professionals, but also as organizations and systems to have, you know, for environments to be healthy in at all levels. But I no longer believe that having a yoga practice is going to fix everything if you're working in a really toxic work environment. It might help you cope, mm-hmm. but the solutions are far bigger than that. And that's what got me really excited about this, actually.
Well, can you say a little more about that? Because that really resonates with me, the idea that there needs to be organizational responsibility. I mean, in my own personal mm-hmm. experience, some of the most intense burnout type environments I've been in have been because the organization itself was, dysfunctional or underfunded or understaffed. How is an individual helping professional? How do we interact with a system that's that big while we're simultaneously trying to take care of our clients?
Well, it's a great question. In fact, I got to experience this firsthand because I live in a smallish community, about 120,000 people in Canada, that is the prison capital of Canada. We have seven prisons, penitentiaries, you know, the whole thing. And so I started working with a lot of correctional officers. And I can tell you without offending anyone, they have all agreed with me that corrections is one of the most toxic work environments of all in any field, you know. Mm-hmm. And research actually showed that two of the other most toxic work environments are high stress, high trauma environments like child welfare. I think everyone would agree with that, and pediatric cancer care. So working as a nurse in a children's cancer ward, you know. And so basically what we started realizing, and this is work I've done with my co-executive director, Dr. Pat Fisher, is that high stress combined with high trauma exposure leads to a really potentially problematic situation unless you have really, really good workplace practices to support your staff. Because, you know, I always give the contrast. My brother works at Cirque du Soleil. You know Cirque du Soleil? Such a weird, I have envy sometimes.
I know. That's sort of my favorite entertainment of all times. Wow. So how exciting. But I imagine that's high stress too.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the thing. The thing I find really interesting, he's in management there. And we talk about this all the time because, of course, they have a lot of stress, as you say. But the difference between, you know, and he's in charge of creativity at the Cirque. And we talk about this all the time because, in a way, our workplaces have a really difficult time being creative, thinking outside the box. You know, I deal with managers all the time and I'll say to them, have you taken your staff to a mission vision retreat thing and it went nowhere and everyone was looking at their watch or griping and they're like, yes, all the time. Mm. And part of what we suggest is that you're kind of putting the horse or the cart before the horse. We need to have an environment where people are well enough to not be putting out fires all day, responding to, you know, the Cirque du Soleil people, of course they have stress, but they also have all this unstructured time for exploration and ideas. And, you know, they are not responding to, you know, huge wait lists and people who are, you know, compromised and angry. And so part of what I think we need to understand as organizations that work in these fields, helping fields, first responders, all of these caring professions, is that we, quite frankly, we need to change the way in which we're doing and taking care of our staff in order to have much, much better outcomes, if that makes sense. I can talk more about that.
Absolutely. I mean, and I'm wondering, are there particular resources that you would recommend, you know, to, if I'm an employee at an organization that is not supporting me, what could I recommend to my supervisor that they could go to for as a resource?
So there's a couple of things that have emerged. And one of the things we started finding is that you're kind of a cardboard cutout generic organizational health interventions that were probably working for your grocery store or your bank weren't always working with our folks. And that was because there wasn't that added awareness of trauma-exposed high-stress environments. That's very, very unique. If you think about that, you know, there are a lot of stressful jobs out there. I think working at the airline service counter last year when there was Snowmageddon in Boston.
Right.
But we have a really unusual added piece. And so the resources that I invite people to look for really are quite, there aren't a lot of them. I mean, we have a whole bunch of stuff. Dr. Fisher's written a couple of books on this topic. Dr. Ginny Sprang, who is at the University of Kentucky, has developed an organizational toolkit for trauma exposed environments. It's actually free. You know, Dr. Fisher has a couple of books that are very inexpensive. And what they do is they start inviting managers and supervisors to have a reflection on how do I take the pulse of, you know, how do I take the temperature of my workplace and where do we start? And I think the piece that's really important to remember is that the bulk of managers and supervisors actually care, you know, like I work with managers all the time. And I'll tell you that 99% of them are deeply concerned about their staff. And I don't just mean the bottom line. Of course, they're concerned about sick leave and all that. But I am meeting some exceptional folks who are undertrained, and they will say that themselves. Like they'll say, I was thrown in at the deep end. I wasn't given any tools. I was just, you know, I learned to be a manager by being, you know, just launched in there. And so I'm finding that people at every layer, whether you're an individual or you're a professional or you're a manager, everyone is actually asking questions and wanting tools.
Well, that's very encouraging for me to hear.
Oh, yeah, both. I feel very optimistic. Yeah.
Well, you know, and maybe that's a good way for me to kind of shift. I wanted to kind of ask about you personally, if that's okay with you. I mean, you're dealing with and hearing stories. It's sort of like the meta trauma, right? There's the people experiencing the trauma, then there's the helpers, and then there's you supporting them. I mean, that's a lot of intense trauma that you're exposed to, and certainly compassion fatigue. I'm wondering, what do you do personally to sustain hope and health, even joy in your own life?
It's a great question. First of all, I'm very lucky. I have a very positive and optimistic predisposition. It's quite irritating to a lot of people. You know, my car could run out of gas and I'd be like, look at us, it's sunny, you know. But it's a little bit why actually I mentioned a very brief part about my intro about my background, because I think that one of the things that we as practitioners have often done is we have perpetuated and contributed to the myth that we were somehow fine and we were different from the people we serve, you know? And I don't think that's true. And I think that, you know, I had a lot of luck in the sense that there was a tremendous amount of support and love and resiliency, but it's also true that my family, you know, fell apart when I was 9 and everything I knew ended and my mom struggled financially. I mean, I think that the first piece is being really honest as practitioners about the fact that, I think it's Yogi Berra who said, you know, we're all bozos on the same bus.
Right.
Just a lesson in humility, but also an awareness of our limits. Because I think that helping professionals often have kind of that, you know, macho superhero mentality that I don't need to, you know, I know I don't need to stop for the day. So the first piece I guess I'm saying is I have always been very open and honest about I'm a deeply flawed individual like everyone else around me. But what I do, I think, that helps me is I check in and tune into myself all the time, but with compassion. So I don't do the January 1st beat up about, you know, you should have done. I do like every Sunday, I will sit down. You know how a lot of people meal plan for the week or they you know, kind of plan? Well, every Sunday I sit down and I'll go, okay, what's going on? How am I feeling? Am I consuming too much trauma material at night? You know, am I watching, like, what am I watching? What am I consuming in my media? Am I drinking too much? Am I exercising enough? You know, just, but really regularly. And then the other thing that I do, which has, to be honest, led to some complaints of my, you know, families and friends, is I'm very, very rigid about my boundaries in terms of helping others. Like, I will, and of course, if something's going on in your life, I will absolutely help you, but I will refer, and I think it's because I used to be a crisis counselor, I will provide you and offer you the tools for you to go and help yourself. I will not rescue you, and I will not spend weeks doing that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, and I really appreciate you saying that. I mean, you mentioned before we kind of have this superhero mentality sometimes in, as helpers, professional helpers. And I love hearing you willing to actually say, I'm not going to rescue you. I'm going to give you great tools and I'm going to be available and you're going to have to do the hard work. That's so important. And I love to hear you say that.
Well, I think it's partly a little bit of I think sometimes we also need to examine what are the secondary gains we get by being rescuers. Like it's, don't get me wrong, like been there, done that, but the teachers, you know, I was like full on volunteered at the penitentiary and women's shelter. You know, I did all that and I think it's great, but I also needed to ask myself, like, what am I getting out of that? And partly I was getting a huge ego boost. Like I love the adrenaline and I love being needed. Like it was great, but there was a cost, you know?
Well, and can I shift you a little bit to ask about that cost? I had watched a video of you where you were talking about the where burnout and compassion fatigue usually show up first. And you had said in our personal lives. Could you speak a little bit about that?
Absolutely. In my book, actually, I start my book with a quote from a nurse I interviewed, and she took her daughter to her daughter's in grade 9, so it was like a take our children to work day. You know, she shadowed her for the day in her very busy medical clinic. And they get home and she sits down with her teenager at dinner and she says, honey, like, what did you think, you know? And her daughter says to her, like, without even missing a beat, she said, Mom, I found out something really interesting today. I found out that you're a heck of a lot nicer at work than you are at home. And that really landed for me. I'm very, very lucky. I have two amazing kids. And when they were little, I at some point realized, well, to be honest, I didn't realize it was someone else. My spouse confronted me with this. Yeah, insight usually comes from someone else. Right. I realized I was like sleepwalking through my life because partly I felt like they were fine. You know, I would do crisis work and I was working with soldiers coming back from Afghanistan. And then I'd go home and someone had like a miniature crisis. And I'd think to myself, are you kidding me? You know, and I started realizing that, first of all, they were only going to be with me for like another 12 years.
Yeah.
And then they were going to be gone, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also realized that that it wasn't fair to them and that I think a lot of us grew up with parents who were workaholics. It was kind of a generational thing. And there was no message, right? I don't know about the messages you received, but when I was growing up, you worked, like my parents worked till they fell down. Like that's what you did.
Yeah.
You know, and they smoked and they drank and like, you know, like the 70s, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's such an important point too, that to look at when I'm being, you know, the superwoman, nonstop, never say no to anything person, I really want to look at what am I teaching, particularly the children in my life, but also, you know, my clients, if I never say no, what am I teaching them about what's expected of them? And that's definitely not what I want to teach.
The hard part about it, though, is that there's always going to be pushback. I remember at some point when I decided to carve out more space for myself, I started screening my calls. I'm talking personally, you know, at home. Mm-hmm. I started screening my calls and there was pushback.
Yeah.
People were not happy. You know, they were used to being available or me being available. And all of a sudden they were like screening your calls again. You know, it was hard. And I think that's why a lot of us relapse into like overfunctioning is that that's really hard, you know, to say no.
Absolutely. To disappoint, particularly people close to me, to us, you know, I have great phone boundaries. I turn off my phone an hour before I go to bed and I don't turn it back on again until I start my work day. And I've gotten a ton of pushback about that, you know, family members like, well, but what if something horrendous happens? And I'm like, well, I think it still will have happened by morning.
You know? Exactly. And I'd probably be better rested and more able to deal with it then,
right? You know? What a beautiful point. So you've talked a lot about the importance of becoming trauma-informed to sustain a healthy practice. Can you explain what that is?
It's like my favorite, most important topic ever. So the super short version is, so I'm a trauma specialist and mental health professional. And for years I was working with, you know, really a mix of people, but some very complex folks that in the field of psychiatry would probably have been called personality disorder. You know, the folks that are really difficult, challenging, sabotage, you know, that they're really, really hard folks to work with. And I finally went to some training about 15 years ago because I was burning out. I didn't have compassion left for them. And then I went to some training on where they basically started explaining what we now know about, you know, adverse childhood experiences before the age of 18 and how the data shows that if you have four or more of these difficult, you know, abandonment, neglect, abuse, what have you, that it changes everything about the way you cope with stress, your immune system, you know, the whole kind of field that's emerging in understanding adverse childhood experiences and how they impact all of these health outcomes. And for me, it was like this massive paradigm shift. I can tell you exactly where I was sitting and Dr. John Briere was speaking. And I was like, oh my goodness, this totally makes sense. And now, instead of being frustrated by this person, I can have a whole framework of thinking, this is the only way you know. This is you know, the analogy I often give that's really simple and everyone gets is diabetes is obviously a very huge health issue. And diabetes educators are often very frustrated by what they call non-compliant patients, right? People don't check their sugars. They don't eat what they should. But when we actually do the research and we realize who is quote unquote not complying, a huge number of those folks have a childhood trauma history. Huge. Or it's a bit like even simpler, you know, domestic violence. Police officers talk all the time about, why does she keep going back? Why doesn't she leave? You know, and when we find out a little bit more about why people, you know, in the Yukon, women return on average 30 to 90 times before they leave.
Wow.
If you were a police officer that had been working, you know, in Ohio, and all of a sudden you were airdropped in Alaska, the Yukon, how quickly would you burn out? You'd burn out overnight because you'd be like, this makes, I don't even understand. So when we go in those communities and we realize, okay, they have multi-generational trauma, trauma-informed is allowing an understanding of childhood trauma to explain, but also frame why people are behaving in ways that they are. It's not an excuse, but it sure is a very helpful framework and context.
Wow, thank you for explaining that. That really makes a lot of sense to me. And another thing that I love about it is that it allows me to shift from feeling victimized by the people that I serve to recognizing that they are doing, I mean, it's a little cliche, but they're doing the best they can. And the reason they're coming to see me is because they've got a challenge, and it's what I get paid for is to support them in that, rather than getting frustrated or angry or blaming them for being in the situation that they're in, you know?
And that the goalposts of success need to change. So, you know, I'll never forget, years ago, I was dealing with a domestic violence situation, and I helped the woman, you know, find the apartment, the moving van, you know, the whole story. Right. And at the very end of our appointment, I said, and she was all ready to go. And at the end of our appointment, I said to her, I said, listen, let's pretend her name is Julie. I said, listen, Julie, if you decide not to leave, please come back next week anyhow. Like, whether you leave or not, I want to see you next week. And I remember she looked at me and she said, well, of course I'm leaving. Like, what are you talking about? You know, she was totally shocked. The following week, she comes in to see me and she said, I didn't leave for whatever reason. He apologized, you know, whatever cycle she was at in her thing, safety, whatever. And she said, the only reason I came back to see you is because of you said that last thing, that phrase. And it gave me goosebumps, right? And I thought, I met her where she was at her level of readiness. And you know what? She left eventually, but on her own time and when it was safe and all of the, but you know, my clinical supervisor always used to say, when you are working harder than your client, you know, you're barking up the wrong tree, you know?
Well, and it just sounds so much less exhausting the way that you approach that, where you weren't attached to what she was going to do and you weren't going to get frustrated and have your own whole process to work through if she didn't do what you wanted her to do. You were supporting her in such a lovely way to find her own path, and you weren't attached to her having to be a certain way.
In order to do that, you need to be in a good place. And that's why I keep talking about, you know, the green, yellow, red zone of compassion fatigue or burnout. Mm-hmm. When you're in the green zone, you're well. And so you can do that. And when you're crispy fried, that's when you start rescuing, over functioning, making clinical mistakes. You know, I always think about that awesome scene in Bridesmaids, you know, where Melissa McCarthy brings all those golden retrievers home from the wedding or something.
Right.
Got like 12 of them, you know. And, she's like, oh. And that image is so strong for me because I think when we are in that mode of like, I'm going to rescue the world, I'm going to take you home, I'm going to cross the line, you know, I'm going to buy you shoes, even though I never buy shoes for clients. Like, those are the red flags. Mm-hmm. I mean, our intent is noble, don't get me wrong, but it's unsustainable. Like, we just can't.
Right. Right. Exactly. Well, my gosh, I can't believe the time is flying here. I think the last question I want to ask you is if you just had three things that you could recommend to someone new in our field What would it be? What would they be?
Ooh, this is so good. Okay. So the first thing is, you won't be surprised that I will say, become trauma-informed, 100% essential. Mm-hmm. And a way to do that, there's a fantastic TED Talk by Dr. Nadine Burke-Harris. She's a pediatrician in San Francisco who explains what becoming trauma-informed is in 15 minutes. Like, you just get it, you know? And there's a trauma-informed care project that's free and not for profit. So first thing, become trauma-informed. Secondly, develop some practices to ground yourself before, during, and after exposure to difficult, traumatic, whatever, challenging environments. Mm-hmm. And there's so much now about mind-body medicine and meditation and resiliency, you know. So learn to become trauma-informed, learn to ground yourself, and also develop a life outside of this identity, you know, because I think part of it is we become so tied to me, the social worker, me, the nurse, me, the police officer. And when we're not well, we lose our way of thinking, who am I in this world? What is my contribution other than this work? So have a life outside of work, you know?
Wow, those are fantastic. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. Several things that you said are standing out for me. I mean, that the one about develop a life outside of this identity feels super important. And recognizing that there's organizational responsibility, not just individual helping professions. And then I love the piece about stepping out of the myth that we're fine, you know, to really be honest as helping professionals about how we're doing. And of course, I think I wouldn't be honoring you if I didn't say a big takeaway is become trauma-informed.
Absolutely.
So as we mentioned at the beginning, I know that you're giving our listeners a gift to get more of this amazing work. So how can people get more of you?
So we have an annual conference. It's called Care for You, and it takes place in Toronto in June. The weather's fabulous. Mm. And it's an annual one-day conference for individuals and organizations, you know, leaders and individuals. And there's three streams. It's called Learn, Connect, and Refuel, and every year is different. And so you can take a look at the conference, but our gift is going to be, if anyone's interested, we're offering quite a significant reduction to the registration fee to attend.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. And that's in Toronto, Canada.
That's correct, on June 23rd.
Wonderful. Well, you know, I feel like we've opened up so many wonderful areas to explore. And I imagine that at the conference that will be an opportunity to do more of a deep dive into all of these and even more.
Absolutely.
Gosh, Françoise, thank you so much for your time today. This has been incredibly valuable for me. And I just want to express my gratitude for the work that you do and for your curiosity to do the research that you've done to become informed in all the many ways that you are and your willingness to share all of this with our tribe today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, be sure to join us for our next interview in the Transformational Healers Summit for Helping Professionals. Break through burnout, give your gifts, and love your life. And as you're listening to this, remember, you really are making a difference.